All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am giving you my rapid reaction to the Falcons' selection of Alabama wide receiver Calvin Ridley in the first round of the 2018 NFL Draft.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of FalcFans.com, one of the longest-running Falcon websites on the internet, on Twitter, at FalcFans, and, of course, the host of this Locked On Falcons podcast. So today we are going to talk about the Falcons' selection of Calvin Ridley. They, as they always do, they throw you a curveball. Yeah, I've talked for several weeks saying that if the Falcons go wide receiver, it'll probably be DJ Moore. Of course, they go Calvin Ridley. DJ Moore went off the board two picks earlier to the Carolina Panthers. So, you know, what's going to be interesting about this episode, I'll say this, is it's now about two hours after the Falcons made the pick. And I'm still kind of processing this. And I normally what I do when I do these podcasts is I write a script that has bullet points, sort of speak, and talking points that I want to get to. And, you know, as you guys know, regular listeners know, I go on tangents and whatnot throughout the podcast. But generally, that script is there for me to get back on track. I've written like barely a script because I still haven't really processed this pick. So this may make for a really bad episode of this podcast or a really good episode of this podcast or a typical, I don't know, mediocre episode of this podcast or whatever it is. So we're just going to go a lot more off the cuff. I mean, the main things I did want to say, the first thing I want to say about this pick, I'm not in love with this pick. But guess what, guys? I'm never in love with like any of the Falcons picks. I'm sure I've recounted them on this podcast, but I've certainly done it on Twitter. Outside of Michael Vick, outside of Jake Matthews, outside of Matt Ryan, outside of Vic Beasley, generally speaking, the Falcons' first-round pick, I'm pretty lukewarm on, and more often than not have been negative, slightly negative on. Over the years, certainly this century. And so this one goes in that. And I, knowing that and understanding that, I'm sort of conflicted on this pick because I know, similar to so many of those other picks, whether it was Keanu Neal, whether it was Desmond Trufant, whether it was whoever else you want to throw in, Tack McKinley. I know 5 years from now, I'm going to look back and be like, yeah, you remember when I was upset about that pick and how silly that was because this player turned into a really good player? That's how I kind of know this pick is going to go. So in that sense, I want to give a positive spin on this pick and say, oh, how great it's going to be and how wonderful Calvin Ridley is going to be in Atlanta. He's going to be this amazing player, and he'll be one of the five best wide receivers of all time that plays for the Falcons, you know, up there in the pantheon with Julio Jones and Roddy White and Terrence Mathis and whoever else you want to throw in the 70s and 80s up on that list, Andre Rison as well. Like, you know, like I all believe that, you know, sitting here today. But at the same time, I'm sort of conflicted because from my perspective, and I'm not saying this is the right perspective, but this is my perspective, I think wide receivers tend to get overdrafted, and the Falcons kind of did it again. They kind of overinvested in a number two receiver more than they needed to. But like, as long as the guy's good, you're not really going to care. As many of you guys that, you know, say that the Falcons didn't overpay for Mohamed Sanu and they've gotten perfect value on that pick, sure. They, you know, they signed that guy and then 2 years later drafted his replacement. But yeah, of course he lived up to his contract. That being said, and the other part of the issue, and it's more Sark related, and I'll save that towards the end. Like this, basically I'll summarize before we get into sort of the positives about Calvin Ridley. It basically tells me that the offense isn't going to change. And my biggest issue with the offense isn't going to change. But that's something I'll save to the end because, you know, I don't want to be too critical. Because, again, I know 5 years from now I'm going to be looking back at this podcast and like, why was I so upset about this pick? Because Calvin Ridley's so good and all that sort of thing. But before we get into the positives, and part of the reason why I'm not sort of glowing about this pick or effusive with the praise of Calvin Ridley is, to be honest with you, for the reasons I said at the top of the show, I had no inclination, no thought that the Falcons would take Calvin Ridley in the first round. So I didn't really watch Calvin Ridley this offseason. I watched some of him. But in terms of the wide receivers, like the first round guys, the Calvin Ridleys and the Cortland Suttons, I didn't really watch those guys. Because I was like, there's no way the Falcons are going to take a wide receiver in the first round. So I really need to focus in on the second and third and fourth round wide receivers, where it's more likely that the Falcons are going to take guys. And I've seen Calvin Ridley play over the years at Alabama. Of course, if you watch college football, you've seen everybody who plays for the Crimson Tide play over the years. So I have a general idea of how good a player he is. But like in terms of sort of being like, this is why I like the pick or this is why I like the player. Honestly, I got to go over this weekend and watch more film. Or let me rephrase that. I'm not watching all 22. I'm watching cut-ups on YouTube. So that's something I will certainly do tomorrow morning. And when we get to, you know, it could be on tomorrow's episode if I have a massive change of heart. But, you know, when we get to Sundays or Monday's episode, you know, I might be a little bit more. And probably, truth be told, by the time we get to Monday, I'll have better wrapped my head around this better, which is sort of what happens every year. Because it's like initially that initial shock is like, okay, Falcons, you zigged when we all thought you were going to zag. And it takes a little bit to process that. And then eventually it grows on you. And so, like, it's funny. Like, it's hilarious to me. And we'll move on in a second. But it's funny to me because, like, I knew this. Like, they were going to do something. Like, I basically spent the entire offseason trying to wrap my head around, like, all the possibilities. Like, I spent the last couple of weeks, like, okay, if they go linebacker, like, okay, I get it. I don't agree with it, but I get it. You know, they go this position, they go that position. And then they still did something that just came out of left field to me. And it was just, this is the classic Falcons, man. You know? So I got more to say about this, but I do want to remind you guys, if you want to get all your draft takes, as well as reactions to all the NFL teams' first round picks, then you guys got to check out Locked On NFL Draft podcast with host John Ledyard and Trevor Sikkema, as well as the Locked On NFL podcast with host Matt Williamson, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So, you know, the thing that Ridley is known for, like, here's the good. Here's where I can immediately say the good on Ridley is. Excellent route runner, probably, very, very likely to be the best possession receiver in his draft class. I can say that with relative confidence. That's what he's going to be. He's going to be a possession receiver. And that often can be a quote-unquote number one receiver because he can be the type of guy that gets 8-plus targets a game, which is typically what you expect out of a number one receiver. That's not going to happen in Atlanta as long as Julio Jones is around. We just know that's not going to be the case. And you would assume without a massive, massive overhaul of the Falcons' offense and their sort of offensive identity, even if he's one of the better number twos in the league, you're probably not going to see that amount of work. You're still going to see roughly 5, you know, 6, maybe 7 targets a game, which is a high-end number two, you know, long-term, again. And we'll see sort of where his ceiling is and where his – and I think a lot of that depends on where Julio Jones is in a couple of years. You know, Julio Jones may only have 2 more peak seasons left, or he could have 5. If it's 2, then Ridley will get some, you know, more opportunities to succeed and put up the sort of production that will certainly make his first-round draft status look better in retrospect. But if it's 5, then, you know, you're basically having a 60-catch receiver for 5 years, you know, which is not a bad thing, but probably isn't ideal in that situation. I think the thing that you like about this pick with Ridley is that he is basically a better version of what Sanu and Hardy are, which is, again, a possession receiver, a guy that's going to live in the short and intermediate routes. Ridley does have more of a vertical element to his game than certainly, definitely those guys, but I don't necessarily know if we're going to see Ridley being this big element of the vertical attack. You know, I don't think that's what he's going to do in this offense. I think by and large, you know, again, assuming for the most part that Julio Jones is going to be around for a little bit longer, that's going to be Julio's job. And what Ridley is going to do is get a lot of more one-on-one coverage, which he's going to win because of his ability to separate from coverage, which is, again, something that Sanu and Hardy don't do quite as well. The other thing is because Ridley has that more of a vertical element in his offense, he can win on more than four routes than, you know, your current number two arguably only wins on, and your number three basically is good at those same routes but can do a little bit more. You know, he can run comebacks and whatnot, and Ridley can do all that and more, and also, you know, add the 7, 8, and 9 routes to the offense that the current number two and number three don't necessarily really thrive upon and rarely are asked to run. So you're sort of getting an all-around receiver. And from that perspective, it makes sense why you would pick Ridley at this point in the draft. It's not to say that Ridley wasn't a first-round receiver. It's just more, you know, and again, I'll get into this later, it's more my beef with sort of when you have a player the caliber of Julio Jones as your wide receiver run, I don't think you need to invest as much as the Falcons have over the years in their number two receiver. It's sort of, you know, it's analogous in my eyes to sort of if you have a dominant pass rush, right, you don't need to invest as much in the cornerback position and in your secondary as other teams need to who have a less dominant pass rush but need sort of to invest in their secondary in order to sort of reach the same level of success that you do. And it's kind of the same way. If you have a dominant number one receiver versus a Brandon Cooks type of number one receiver, who's a competent to good number one receiver, depending on what you think about Brandon Cooks. I'm sure many of you think less of him than that. But the point is, the drop-off from Julio Jones to Brandon Cooks, it's not quite the same, but you could sort of say, like, then the number two that you have to pair with Julio Jones, the drop-off from him versus the number two you have to pair with Brandon Cooks is comparable. You see what I'm saying? To achieve the same sort of thing. And so it's one of those things where it's like you can sort of take the value of investing, you know, if that means basically, so the Falcons, in order to get a quality number two, the Falcons, you know, other teams might have to use a first or second round pick to get that guy, but the Falcons only have to use a third or fourth round pick. You see, you know, that's sort of what I'm getting at. And so that's part of my issue with the pick. But I do think with Ridley, he is a first round sort of talent. Even though I do think the Falcons, quote unquote, only needed a second or third round sort of talent to suffice. I think the thing with Ridley is going to be, I think people are misguided if they think he's going to come in right away and have this massive role in the offense. I think what this pick signals is that the Falcons are probably going to move on from Mohamed Sanu, potentially as well as Justin Hardy after this season. You know, it'll depend with Hardy. It's going to depend heavily on sort of how much his production is this year and then what is his market price next year. Like, I could certainly see a scenario where they bring him back for sort of modest number three wide receiver money next season to be the number three wide receiver while Ridley sort of is moved up into the number two spot. But it's hard to me to imagine the team keeping Ridley, Sanu, and Julio Jones. Now, if Sanu comes out and has this monster season, I'll certainly, you know, revisit that prediction. But at this time, if Sanu is basically the same player he has been for the last 2 years, well, here's my negativity or my pessimism. I'm sitting here trying to logically say, like, no, he's not going to be back. But then at the same time, like, well, the Falcons love them some Mohamed Sanu much more than they probably should. So who knows right now at this point in time. But the assumption right now for me is it's going to be hard to maximize Ridley's ability if Sanu's there. And again, going back to what I've said numerous times about using a number one pick on a wide receiver, because Ridley doesn't know the offense, because Ridley isn't a polished player, hasn't learned how to really adjust his routes to coverages and all these sorts of things and the things that you need to do to be a high-level wide receiver, he's going to be probably split time with Taylor Gabriel and He's going to split time with Justin Hardy to sort of fill the void that Taylor Gabriel left. And, you know, I did do some research prior to recording this and looking at sort of what you can sort of expect in terms of the snap count. Like, if you look at Hardy played 382 snaps last year, but about 158 of those, roughly 40%, came in three games in Buffalo, Miami, and Carolina, week 17 game against Carolina, where Jones, Sanu, and Gabriel missed significant chunks of those games. But when you factor in his snaps over the other 13 games he played last season, he averaged about 17.2 snaps a game. Then you look at Gabriel's workload last year, and he missed a significant chunk of time in that week 17 finale against Carolina, and then got a boost to his playing time in the Buffalo and Miami games again when Jones and Sanu were nicked up. And then if you look at his 13 quote-unquote normal games, playing time, he averaged about 32.5 snaps a game. So you combine those two guys together, your number three and number four wide receivers based off of last year's offense averaged about 50 combined snaps per game. And so I imagine instead of having like a 32-17 split like we saw last year, it'll be closer to 25-25 between Hardy and Ridley, because again, Ridley doesn't know the offense. But I do think because of Ridley's status as a first-round pick and his sort of pedigree and his, you know, name value and all that sort of thing, he'll probably get the lion's share. So he'll probably get closer to 30 snaps a game this year. And then again in 2019, probably move into that number two spot opposite Julio Jones, assuming the Falcons move on from Mohamed Sanu, which I am assuming at this point in time. But that may be wishful thinking on my part. Who knows? Yeah, I don't know what else I want to add. Like, I'm sitting here just racking my brain trying to think, like, do I have any other thoughts before I want to get into the Sarkisian stuff? Because ultimately, my beef is less with Calvin Ridley, and it's more with sort of what this move sort of signals to me about the Sark offense and my main issue with the Sark offense. You know, I want to be clear. I do think, again, like the other draft picks the Falcons have had in Dan Quinn, several years from now, we're going to be looking back and be like, yeah, that was a good pick. And so that's part of my conflicting, where most of my hangups have nothing to do with Calvin Ridley. It has just more to do with sort of principles of value that I have honed and developed and come to believe in over the years based off of, you know, teams building their rosters around wide receivers. And you can certainly say that, you know, taking a wide receiver at pick 26 is not necessarily being like, oh, we're building a roster around wide receivers. It's just, I personally think, I guess I'll leave it at this. Like, my beef is I think teams overvalue wide receivers. And again, I'm not saying this is an opinion, and I'm sure many of you will disagree heartily with this opinion. But I've come to believe over many, many years of watching teams build rosters and success and failures, I think offensive skill positions, running back, wide receiver, tight end, by and large, should be valued about the same in terms of their actual impact on your team. You know, you need more wide receivers than you need running backs and tight ends, but I don't think that necessarily means that you have to overvalue those guys. But time and time again, you see teams, in my opinion, overdraft wide receivers and undervalue running backs because, you know, people say don't draft a running back in the first round. And by and large, I kind of agree with that statement because you can get good players in round two and three. And it's the same thing with tight end position. I think over the last 7 years, on average, there's been less than one, you know, 0.8 tight ends drafted in the first round over the last seven drafts or something like that. And typically teams wait until rounds two, three, and four to take their tight ends. But, you know, teams, because that premium is at the wide receiver position. And again, I guess my issue is I've kind of pushed back of why there is such a premium. I personally think you can also take good wide receivers in rounds two and three and four, just like you do at the other two positions. And so that's sort of why I'm not as enthusiastic about this pick, even though you can certainly make arguments that Calvin Ridley is sort of quote unquote the exception to that and sort of stands out a little bit above that, that makes him worth a first round pick. But just sort of in general, it's just like, you know, you're a run based team. You don't use three wide receivers all that much, you know, and I guess going back to what I was saying with Sanu being a goner, like they would have to fundamentally change their offense. You know, they were 24th in the league last year in usage of 11 personnel, only using it about 49.99% of the time. So 50% of the time, which was the eighth or ninth lowest, whatever 24th is, ninth lowest rate in the league. The highest, I think I said before on a previous podcast, was the Rams at 81%. The league average was about 59 something percent. So, you know, most teams are sort of in that 50, high 50s, mid 60s sort of range. And it's not as if the Falcons have to change a whole lot to get there, but it is a lot more 11 personnel. It is a lot less two tight end sets. It's certainly a lot less fullback. And based off of the current roster, you would assume, okay, well, maybe they are scrapping the fullback position. Now, we saw sort of how successful that was last year. And so that leads into what I'm probably going to talk about a little bit. So if you don't want to hear me go on a 15-minute rant about Sark, then, you know, I bid you good day and come back to the podcast tomorrow. We'll talk about the day two picks. Again, I'll watch more Ridley tape over this weekend, and maybe I will come back a lot more effusive with my praise of this selection than I currently sound right now. But before we get to the negativity, it's not going to be that negative. It's just going to be me being skeptical, as I always am, which comes off as very negative. But before we get there, maybe you guys are looking to add cryptocurrency like Bitcoin to your retirement account and diversify your portfolio, but you find the world of cryptocurrency too confusing and you want to know how to get involved. BitTrust IRA helps you seamlessly and securely add cryptocurrency to your portfolio. Their team handles the entire process to make it easy on you. Download your free copy of their cryptocurrency IRA investor's guide at bittrustira.com/podcast. That's bittrustira.com/podcast. Or you can give them a call right now to learn more at 855-642-8800. Again, that's 855-642-8800. Okay, here's where my real beef is with this pick, because this is what it's telling me, right? Maybe I'm reading too much into it, maybe. But as you guys know, as regular listeners of this podcast know, I have a love-hate relationship with Sark, or it's more of a hate, lukewarm relationship with Sark. My main beef with the Falcons offense, it isn't play calling. I think play calling is whatever. And what before anybody goes misinterprets what I'm saying with that, I think the thing that you often hear people complaining about is the wrong thing. It's like people complain about, oh, why did he run a pass in this situation? Why did he run the ball in this situation? Why did we call a screen pass on 3rd and 10? Why did we run a rollout? On why do we run a jet sweep? And like, again, I have complained about some of those same things as well. But for the most part, what you're doing is basically nitpicking 2 or 3 plays a game and saying, I don't like that play call. And that's the problem. And to me, most of the time, a lot of that stuff can be very easily solved just by better execution. And I think ultimately, at the end of the day, you're complaining about 2 or 3 plays is kind of inconsequential over the course of a season that includes 1,000 plays. And ultimately, sort of, you can flip a switch in the sense of if you that guy hits his block or that guy runs a better route or that guy makes a better throw, and all of a sudden those play calls suddenly start to work. My biggest issue with the Sark offense is the lack of route combinations and poor play design and the inability to reliably, not to say never ever, but reliably be able to attack certain coverages and certain defenses and challenge defenses in specific ways that, to me, rather than affecting two or three plays over the course of a game, those things affect 20 or 30 plays over the course of a game. And I think, you know, you can go back and look at the Eagles game as a prime in the playoffs as a prime example of this. And in that game specifically, the Eagles challenged the Falcons by saying, we're going to man up your receivers. And we believe, whether it's Malcolm Jenkins or Ronald Darby or whoever the case may be, your guys can't beat our guys. And what proved true in that game was our guys couldn't beat their guys. The issue with Sark in that game, you know, while everybody focuses on those final play calls at the end of the game, which is understandable because it, as always, it boils, this Falcon season boils down to those two or three plays, right, at the end of a game. And you say those are a big deal because if those two or three plays had gone a different way, we would have won the game. But I think the Falcons would have been in a much more advantageous situation where it wouldn't have had to boil down to those two or three plays had they done things better in that game to sort of force the Eagles, okay, you're going to play man coverage, you're going to man up our guys. Well, guess what? We're going to do this. We're going to run pick routes. We're going to do this. We're going to do that to sort of force you to not play the way that you want to play. You are not going to dictate how this game is going to go. And that was the big issue with the offense last year against quality defenses like the Eagles, like the Rams, like the Vikings, etc. And where this comes in with the Ridley play, why am I talking about Sark when I should be talking about Ridley? To me, with the Ridley pick, was you go out and you get the best route runner in the league. What it tells me is the whole play design, the whole route combination thing, isn't going to change. You came away looking at last season and saying, oh, the problem isn't that the play calling misutilized Taylor Gabriel, and instead of using that player on a wide variety of routes, you only designed four plays for him: jet sweep, deep post, screen pass, and drag route. You know, the issue is he couldn't separate or do the things that you wanted him to do on X number of plays in order to make that work. And so that's kind of part of the reason why I'm tentative about being happy about this pick. Now, what I think Ridley does is he does do the things like, if you're going to play quote unquote vanilla with your route combinations and whatnot, and basically say next time you play the Eagles and they challenge, you're like, okay, we're going to man your guys up and we challenge you to beat us. Ridley puts you in a much better situation than certainly Sanu or Hardy or Gabriel do to win that challenge, to answer that challenge, because this guy can separate from those types of receivers. Sanu can't. That's why, you know, when, like, you know, again, I don't want to turn this into a Sanu bashing session, but it's like, it's baffling to me how praising people are of Sanu when it's like, anytime he faces a good cornerback, he gets shut down. I mean, shut down in the sense he has two catches for 25 yards, you know, three catches for 45 yards or whatever the case may be. If 45, 32 yards or whatever the case may be. And it's like, you know, that's not going to be Ridley. And kudos to the Falcons. You know, if I could applause without ruining the audio of this podcast, I would. But it just sort of shows me like, okay, this is still going to be an issue. That's kind of what it's telling me. Now, I could be very wrong about that, and Sark may figure it all out. But I don't think you're going to be attracted to, quote unquote, the best route runner in the league, the guy that's going to be separate, that easily separates from coverage that much, if your diagnosis for the problem was, we need to run better route combinations, we need to do a better job attacking coverages. I think you reach that diagnosis, you reach that sort of cure that Ridley is supposedly if you didn't come up with that diagnosis. If your diagnosis was, we need guys that can win when we face the Eagles. Like, the issue against the Eagles wasn't the man coverage, wasn't the route combinations, it wasn't the vanilla play calling, it wasn't the game play design, I mean. It was, we didn't have guys good enough to win in those situations. We don't have a, Sanu's not good enough to beat Ronald Darby. Right? Taylor Gabriel's not good enough to beat Trey Waynes. That was the conclusion they came to. And then some of those conclusions, I think, are the wrong conclusions, but that was the conclusion they came to, and they wound up drafting Calvin Ridley. And that's one of the reasons why I'm not as sort of enthusiastic about this, because I still think the core problem is still there. And I do wonder, next time you get to the postseason, you know, are you going to be better prepared to win that way? Absolutely. But you're still going to be held back a little bit, even if you do have that high-level number two receiver that so many people have been praising Sanu as over the last year or so, that Ridley, I think, legitimately is or will be once he finally becomes the number two in 2019. I don't know how much is that going to help you. I'm a little skeptical of it. That's where I'm leaving it at, guys. Again, I don't think this is a bad pick. I don't think it's a bad pick. I'm still in the middle of processing it. And unfortunately, I have to record a podcast. And I know many people will listen to this episode and be like, Aaron, you don't know what you're talking about. And it's fine. Like, again, I'm not upset that the Falcons pass on the D-tackle. I'm not. You know, I'm upset that they pass on the D-tackle for a wide receiver. But I'm not upset that they pass on the D-tackle. You see what I was like? It's a subtle difference. I know it doesn't sound like it, but it's like a, like, I don't have a problem with them passing a D-tackle. This is a D-tackle class. We've been talking about that for months. But doing it for a wide receiver, I don't know. That's a little problematic for me, personally. Especially a possession receiver. Not a dynamic vertical threat that's going to be this guy that's going to challenge coverages. It's just going to be a guy who's going to live in Julio Jones's shadow and, you know, eat in that shadow. And more than do his own thing, carve out a role within that shadow. But I don't know if he's going to be expanding the shadow. But, you know, maybe I'll watch Ridley a little bit more over the weekend and come to a different conclusion. I reserve the right to change my opinion. And as we always do, I've been, you know, as I said, spending months trying to wrap my head around all the different permutations of how the Falcons are going to zig when they're going to zag. And they still managed to outflank me a little bit on this. So, again, I'm still processing it. I hope you guys enjoyed this much more meandering sort of off-the-cuff episode. It's my honest thoughts, you know, unscripted, I guess you could say. Maybe it was bad. I don't know. I'm about to find out when I hit the stop record button and listen to the edit. But we'll be back tomorrow with a rapid reaction to the day two picks. After sleeping on this pick, I'll probably feel better about it in the morning. We'll see. But if you want to give your thoughts and tell me why this Ridley pick is the greatest pick, or why you're massively upset that the Falcons passed on Taven Bryan and let him go to Jacksonville, or whoever it is that you had was the apple of your eye, you can do so on Twitter. I'm at FalcFans. If it's podcast related, just let me know in the tweet. If it is podcast related, just go ahead and send it over to Locked On Falcons. That's the show's Twitter handle. If you prefer Facebook, you can hit me up on the Locked On Falcons Facebook page. Give us a like while you're there. You can also send an email to lockedonfalcons@mail.com. And you also post a comment on lockedonfalcons.com as well as falcfans.com. Before we finish this thing off, I am curious. I stopped keeping track after a while. I think I hit like 3 picks on my mock draft. I think it was like 3 picks. I think technically the Lamar Jackson going to Baltimore at the end of the first round counts as a hit. So I think I got Baker Mayfield, Leighton Vander Esch, Lamar Jackson on my final mock on FalcFans.com. So congratulations to me. I'm really good at this, right? I thought it was a very interesting first round. Certainly a lot of unexpected things happening. I'll leave it at this. Love the Cardinals trading up for Josh Rosen. Makes me forgive them for their decision to overpay Sam Bradford and Mike Glennon. The Bills, I don't know what you're doing, giving up what you gave up for Josh Allen, 2 seconds to get Josh Allen. Your quarterback roster is Josh Allen, A.J. McCarron, and Nate Peterman. I don't know how, if you're a Bills fan, like, again, I'm not even trying to bash Josh Allen, because if you listen to the two episodes that we did, like, Josh Allen's okay, he's fine. But good luck with that. Good luck with that. Baker Mayfield to the Browns. I wasn't in love with Baker Mayfield, but, you know, relatively speaking, that's a solid pick. The Jets getting Sam Darnold, I think that's a good pick for them. I think that actually puts them well ahead of the curve to potentially down the road. Probably not this year. Certainly not this year. But, you know, 3 to 5 years from now to be legitimate challengers and may overthrow the Patriots as the AFC East champions if Brady is done at that point in time. So, love Lamar Jackson going to Baltimore. I told you guys, the fact that the Cardinals got Josh Rosen and the Ravens got Lamar Jackson is going to make my choice of which Falcons home game, Cardinals or Ravens, that much harder. It's going to be tough. I'll probably still side with the Cardinals just because there's a good chance that Rosen will actually play, because we know Sam Bradford ain't playing. His knee is done. He's done. I don't care what anybody says. He's done. Lamar Jackson probably will sit the bench in Baltimore for year one, and then they will Alex Smith Joe Flacco next year and move on from him. We'll see how that works out for them. But, yeah, they have made my choice harder because, yeah, my two guys, so. We'll see what happens, guys. Until then, that's my thoughts on the first round. Not, you know, everything else was crazy, and I could probably spend another 30 minutes talking about it, but going pick by pick, but I'm not. So, Seattle, the Rashad Penny pick was a bit strange. Baltimore taking Hayden Hurst. Okay, sure. Yeah. Terrell Edmonds, I did not see that pick on the Steelers as well. I would say those were the three biggest reaches. Followed by Billy Price in round one by the Bengals. Billy Price is fine, but I think he's a little overrated. Colton Miller, yeah, that was probably a reach. Marcus Davenport. The Saints traded up, gave up a future number one to get Marcus Davenport. That's crazy. But I'm letting this episode's dragging out too long. So until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.